Okay. So, good evening. Okay, so we'll do our practice as we usually do. And then tonight we will be working with the second way to generate bodhicitta, equalizing and exchanging self and others. The first way we already completed, the 7-point cause and effect meditation. And then last week we started on equalizing and exchanging self and others. We particularly meditated on equalizing self and others last time, remember? So not just having friend, enemy, and stranger be equal in terms of wanting happiness and deserving happiness and not wanting suffering, but including ourselves in the mix. And so others and ourselves are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering. Okay? So that's the basis for the equalizing and exchanging self and others. And from there we build on it by thinking of the fault of the self-centered mind, the benefits of cherishing others, and then exchanging self and others, and then the taking and giving meditation. Okay, so this method is described in depth in Shantideva's book, Engaging in the Bodhisattva Deeds. So we'll just go over the highlights. Otherwise, if I teach that chapter, it will take a long time, because I really like that chapter. Actually, it was a birthday present His Holiness gave me in, I can't remember what year it was, but he was teaching in Arizona, and on my birthday he taught that chapter, and I thought, that was the best birthday present I ever could have received. Yeah. Okay, so let's begin by watching the breath for a few minutes, and then we'll visualize the Buddha and so on. So I'm counting on you to know the meditation by now and what to visualize, how to think. If you don't, then it would be good to go back and review and watch the first few videos again. Everything's on the website, so you can watch it again and refresh your mind. In the space in front, visualize the Buddha surrounding the Buddha, surrounded by all the other Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And think of yourself surrounded by all the sentient beings. And especially put the ones that you have difficulty with right in front of you. So you have to look at them in order to see the Buddha. And then as we recite the verses, think that you're leading all sentient beings in reciting them and in contemplating their meaning. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create, by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. I take refuge until I have awakened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the merit I create by engaging in generosity and the other far-reaching practices, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind, and present clouds of every type of offering, actual and mentally transformed. I confess all my destructive actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtues of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until cyclic existence ends, and turn the wheel of Dharma for sentient beings. I dedicate all the virtues of myself and others to the Great Awakening. This ground anointed with perfume, flowers strewn Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, imagined as a Buddha land and offered to you, may all beings enjoy. Space of your truth body, from billowing clouds of your wisdom and love, let fall the rain of the profound and extensive Dharma in whatever form is suitable for subduing sentient beings. Guru Ratna Mangala Kam Niryatayami. Glorious and precious root Guru, sit upon the lotus and moon seat on my crown, guiding me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your body, speech, and mind, the eyes through whom the vast scriptures are seen, the three doors for the fortunate who would cross over to spiritual freedom, illuminators whose wise means vibrate with compassion, to the entire line of spiritual mentors I make request. Taya ta mani mani ma mani soha. Taya ta Tayata Mani Mani Maha Mani Soha. Tayata Mani Mani Maha Mani Soha. Tayata Mani Mani Maha Mani Soha. Tayata Remembering that there's the Guru Buddha on the crown of your head, then we will set our intention and request the Buddha's inspiration to fulfill it. So it is not right to cherish myself and abandon others, because we are all equal in our desire for happiness and our wish to avoid suffering. Hence, I need to cherish others as I cherish myself. For just as being treasured by others pleases me, so will others be pleased when I treasure them. Moreover, even though I wanted to attain excellent results for myself, since beginningless time in samsara I have cherished myself and accomplish nothing for the sake of others. As a result, I have experienced only myriads of misery. Consequently, self-centeredness has been the source of all my misfortunes, all the dukkha of samsara, of the lower realms, and so forth. Since preventing future self-centeredness from arising, overcoming present self-centeredness, and cherishing others are the sources of all good qualities, may I generate the attitude cherishing others that I currently lack, and may whatever I have grow stronger. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do so. In brief, Munindra attained complete Buddhahood by abandoning self-centeredness, cherishing others, and devoting himself exclusively to their welfare. By following his example, I too will attain Buddhahood very soon. Having failed to do so, until now I have wandered in samsara. And as long as I continue to harbor self-centeredness within me, I will not be able to cultivate cherishing others. Or if I do, I will not manage to maintain that attitude. Thus, may the thought that is preoccupied with myself and abandoned others not arise in me even for an instant. May I give up my selfish concern and treasure others. May I entirely take upon myself other beings' dukkha and negativities and offer others all my happiness and goodness. Thus may I ensure that all sentient beings are free of dukkha and attain great happiness. Presently, I lack the ability needed to do this. If you ask who has it, it is a complete and perfect Buddha. Thus, may I attain the state of complete and perfect Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings, my mothers. Guru Buddha, please inspire me to be able to do this. In response to your requesting the Guru Buddha, a duplicate of the Guru Buddha's body comes forth from him into you, absorbing into you through the crown of your head, like one butter lamp lighting another. It dissolves into you, and you dissolve. And then imagine yourself on a precious throne, both high and wide, supported by 8 great snow lions, on a seat of a multicolored lotus and sun and moon disks. And imagine yourself in the form of the conqueror Shakyamuni, with a body the color of pure gold, made of light, a crown protuberance on your head, one face, 2 arms. Your right hand touches the earth, the left in meditation posture holds an alms bowl full of nectar. You are elegantly robed in the 3 saffron-colored monastic robes. You sit in Vajra posture in a flood of light emanating from your body, which is made of pure light and adorned with the signs and marks of a Buddha. Visualizing yourself thus as the Buddha, emanate your body, belongings, and virtue in the form of 5 colored light and nectar radiating from your body, and offer these to all sentient beings. And by your offering your body, belongings, and virtue to them, imagine that all sentient beings thereby attain the excellent happiness of upper rebirth and the highest good of liberation and full awakening. Feel very happy about being able to give all of this to the sentient beings and about their having received it and used everything you offered, and them also transforming into Buddhas because of this. So these requesting verses here, you know, are outlining the steps in the meditation. And it's quite clear that we have to lessen our self-centered thought before we can cherish others. Yeah. And I think that's an important thing to remember, because sometimes we really get enamored with the meditation on love and cultivating love, and it makes us feel good about others. But without first having reduced our own self-centeredness, then our love is really not so potent, you know. It may just be a feel-good experience for us. Yeah. Whereas when we have to look at our own self-centeredness and self-preoccupation, that can be quite an ordeal, isn't it? To own up to what's really going on in this mind of ours. Yeah, it's very humbling, isn't it?
It's very scary.
Yeah, and sometimes it's scary. Yeah. Now, I want to, before we go into the disadvantages of the self-centered thought, I want to comment on translation here. The initial translation was self-cherishing. That's how it was initially translated way back when people didn't know English really well. And that translating the Tibetan term as self-cherishing instead of self-preoccupation or self-centeredness can lead people to have the wrong idea. Because when you hear self-cherishing is the cause of all of our problems, then you think, oh dear, then if I don't cherish myself, I should hate myself. And if I hate myself, then I won't have any problems. And if I hate myself because I'm selfish, then I really won't have any problems. And that fits in very well with Christian culture, doesn't it? And the kind of guilt that people are always brought up with. Yeah? That if you have the slightest, tiniest selfish thing, you are a sinner, you are evil, you're going to hell, you know? And then people get very, very confused because they think, wait a minute, I abandoned the religion I grew up with because I thought that was nonsense, and then I'm coming here and they're teaching me the same thing. Okay? So this is one area where I think it's very important not to use the term self-cherishing, because it does have this term is something we want to abandon. Okay? Self-centeredness, yes, we want to abandon. Self-preoccupation, yes, we want to abandon. But we do need to cherish ourselves in the sense that we are human beings with the Buddha nature. We have incredible potential. Yeah? And if we go back into this old thing, this wrong conception mind, that if I have any good feeling about myself, I'm a sinner and I'm arrogant, then we're putting more stumbling blocks on our path to enlightenment than there are already. So it's very important, don't get into this thing of hating yourself. And I really say this because one of my very old Dharma friends, she told me, you know, because she had this wrong thing about, oh, self-cherishing is bad, and so I should just stop cherishing myself, and then my Dharma practice will go better. And, you know, stop cherishing myself means hating myself, putting myself down, not thinking well of myself. So she was confused about this. So she went to see one Tibetan Geshe, and it was through a translator. And so she explained this to him and said, is that right? And he said, yes, it is. Because the translator was using the term that was translated as self-cherishing, which to him meant one thing, and to her it meant another thing. To him it didn't mean, hate yourself and all of this. But it did mean, yes, you have to cut that mind. So to her, okay, cut that mind, stop cherishing myself. You see? So how this misunderstanding happened? So that made her even more confused. you know? And then thought that putting herself down, thinking badly of herself, that that's the way to get rid of selfishness. That's not, okay? Because we already think poorly of ourselves and put ourselves down. The Buddha didn't need to teach us how to do that. Okay? Yeah? So abandoning this term, you know, in self-centeredness, self-preoccupation, I think in English are much better terms. You know, because a self-centered person, what do? All their focus is centered on themselves. Yeah? And everything that happens is self-referenced. They care about themselves more than other people. They don't care about other people so much because everything's centered on themselves. That kind of mind, that's what we want to abandon. Okay? But within that, we still cherish ourselves because we have the Buddha nature, because we're human beings with a precious human life who have so much potential. You cannot practice the path on the basis of hating yourself and feeling guilty about yourself because you're selfish. It really becomes a huge problem, huge obstacle. Similarly, somebody who's self-preoccupied, yeah, what do they like? Again, always thinking about themselves. No space in the mind to think about anything else but themselves. Yeah. So that mind clearly is a problem on the path. But cherishing ourselves, respecting ourselves, because we have the potential to be a Buddha, that's something we need. Okay? Are you getting what I'm saying? Okay? Okay. So then, yeah, let's think of the disadvantages of self-preoccupation, of self-centeredness. Okay? So, in terms of karma, yeah, when we're self-centered, well, put it this way. Have you ever committed any destructive action for the benefit of others? Every time you've killed, taken what hasn't been freely given, lied to others, slept around, screamed at other people, made fun of them, had idle talk, you know, malice, coveting, wrong views. Did you do any of those for the benefit of sentient beings? No. Did you do those based on self-centeredness? Yeah. Thinking, you know, it's a confused kind of self-centeredness. Thinking that, oh, if I do those actions, it'll bring me happiness. Because we're so confused about what are the causes of happiness, what are the causes of suffering, that we think, oh, if I get what I want, then I'll have happiness. So if I need to, like, scream at some people to get what I want, it's worth it. It's okay. If I have to lie to people to get what I want, then that will help me to be happy. Sleeping around with other people? Yeah, that will help me be happy. Taking things that don't belong to me? Yeah, as long as I don't get caught, that will bring me happiness. Okay? So do you see, however, whenever we get involved in the 10 destructive paths of action, it's always, you know, has self-centeredness underlying it. Yeah, do you see how that works? Yeah? It's always thinking about what's going to make me happy immediately and being very confused about what the cause of happiness is. Yeah? Because some people do actions that, you know, forget about bringing them suffering in future lives. In this life, they wind up suffering more because of an action they did motivated by self-centeredness. Yeah? Okay? So when we look, you know, the destructive karma we create that brings rebirth in the lower realms, you know, who's responsible for it? Our old buddy, self-centeredness. Yeah? So the trick when you're doing this meditation is to realize I am not my self-centeredness. Yeah. Self-centeredness is like one thought that's added on that's not who I am. It's not my nature. It's not who I am. It's this added on but very ingrained and determined self-centeredness. And I've listened to it my entire life, just thinking about what I want and not considering other people's feelings at all, not thinking about how my behavior influences others, only thinking about what is going to make me feel good right now. Not even thinking about future lives and what will bring happiness to me in future lives. My self-centeredness can't even get that far. You know, I mean, that's also self-centered, but I can't even get that far. You know, I'm just hung up in this life. Yeah, whatever I want, you know, I am going to push and shove and lie and steal and control, cajole and control and cry and scream and do whatever is necessary. Beat somebody up. I don't care. I've got to get what I want. Yeah. So that's the way that the self-centered thought thinks. Of course, yeah, as adults, we've learned ways to look like we're not as self-centered as we are. Yeah, kids are very direct. I want this. I want this. I want this. Ah! Give me this. Ah! I mean, kids are very direct and persistent. Yeah, they never give up. They will cry and throw their temper tantrum. Yeah, adults, we're very diplomatic. Well, dear, it would be so nice to do this because da 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 da, and I know you've already always wanted d d d d d, and this will give you d d d d d. So we're not doing it for my benefit. We're doing it to make you happy. Right? Yeah? Or we butter people up. We know they're not going to like what we have to say. So we butter them up. We flatter them. You are so wonderful. You are so fantastic. You are so good. And by the way, give me this. Yeah? So as adults, we, you know, we're very sneaky about how to get our way. Yeah? And make it look like we're not being quite so selfish. Until push comes to shove, and when the other person doesn't fall for it, then we revert to the terrible twos. We scream, we stomp out of the room, we slam the door, we blame them, we open up the file that we've been keeping with everything they've done wrong for the last 25 years. Actually, the last 25 eons. Yeah. And we throw it all at them. Okay. And then when we get what we want, we say, oh, good. Yeah, I have some good karma. I got what I wanted. Meanwhile, the other person's miserable. Everybody else around us is miserable. People have stopped respecting us because of our despicable behavior. Yeah, people lose faith in us. But we got what we wanted. I have my hot fudge sundae, so I don't care. Yeah? So it's very interesting, you know, to kind of do a little bit of a life review and think about the things that we've done that we feel the worst about having done. And guaranteed self-centered mind is in there. guaranteed, you know? And you can see it so clearly sometimes when you look at people's lives. You know, even in the case of suicide, suicide is about the most self-centered thing you can do. Yeah? Because you do not care one bean for all the people who care about you at that moment. All you care about is your own suffering. It's extremely self-centered. I'm not saying people who suicide are bad, but I'm just saying look at what self-centeredness drives us to. Yeah? And self-centeredness drives us to hurt the people that we care about the most. Yeah? I mean, you look at it in families. I always ask people, who have you said the most awful things to, strangers or your family members? Yeah. Would you ever say to a stranger something that you would say to a family member or somebody you live with and know quite well? Do you ever do that? No. Even if we're mad at a stranger, we would never talk to them the way we talk to people we know very well. Yeah? As if, you know, I mean, and that's also a very distinct disadvantage of self-centeredness, because we feel so much that this other person, they know me so well, so therefore I don't need to use regular human manners. I can just say what I want, because they know me so well, they're going to love me anyway. So I can just act with whatever horrendous behavior and inflict whatever kind of pain I want on them by dumping on them. And they love me, so it'll all be okay. Yeah? Isn't that what we do? Yeah? You would never say to a stranger, insult a stranger, the way we would insult somebody that we know very well. And so this self-centeredness, it makes us destroy the relationships that are most important to us in our life. So, and see, this is why the self-centered thought is so deceptive, because it's this little voice saying, listen to me and I will lead you to happiness. But when we listen to the self-centeredness, it makes us do things that backfire and make us more unhappy. Okay? In a relationship with somebody that you know very well, you know, out of self-centeredness, if you yell and scream and insult them and so on and so forth, do the next day, do they wake up in the morning and say, I love you so much? No. What's it like in the next day? Siberia. Isn't it? Dead silence, nobody speaks. Yeah, waiting for somebody to blow up. Yeah. But we got what we wanted the day before. By speaking like that to that person, we bugged them so much that they capitulated. We got what we wanted, and then what's it like the next day? Horrible. Okay, so, you know, these are the people we care the most about. These are the people upon whom we most depend for our happiness, just in this life. And yet they're the people we treat the worst. And by treating them the worst, they, of course, reciprocate it and treat us not very well. And then we get more unhappy, don't we? Yeah? We invent something and we start scolding them. Yeah. You walked in the house and you didn't say hello. I know you're mad at me. You're always mad at me. You did this, you did that. Nah, you think badly of me. Oh, this is na 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 na. Yeah? We start accusing somebody. Yeah? And maybe they didn't say good morning to, you know, hello when we came in the door because they were in the bathroom. You know? But we aren't willing to give them a break. We start inventing stories that we project on them. And then we tell them off. And then we expect them to come back. Oh, you're so wonderful. I'm so glad I live with you. Yeah? So, I mean, it happens in monasteries too, doesn't it? Yeah? I see this person every day. Doesn't matter how I act. Yeah? Anyway, I know the right way to do this. Yeah? We are going to wash the dishes this way. And if you don't wash the dishes this way, get out of the kitchen. And then go shovel some rock. And then go take the test online to get your kitchen license. And then come back and you have twice as many dishes to wash. You know? But we'll do something, won't we? I mean, we're going to win this battle. Okay? So it causes a lot of problems, this life, our self-centeredness, doesn't it? Yeah? And if you really spend some time thinking about everything that you feel badly that you've done in your life, guaranteed self-centeredness is there. Yeah? And if we think about all the negative karma we've created, that's going to ripen in horrible rebirths in the future. Again, we created them all out of self-centeredness. So is this mind whispering in our ear, saying, listen to me, and I'll get you happiness? Is this mind, is the self-centeredness really our friend? No. It's a number one worst enemy. And it's so deceptive because it pretends to be our friend, but the whole time it's lying to us and cheating us. Yeah. And you can see this also in society in general. And there's one example I use a lot because it just really affected me. And the same thing's happening now. But when I lived in Seattle, there was one year when they were voting to raise property taxes in order to give more money to the schools. And this is an issue now, too. Yeah, a lot of people are wanting to cut school budgets because they don't want to pay more tax. So then all these people who don't have kids are up in arms. Why should I pay more tax? Even though they're wealthier, you know, because the wealthier people have nicer houses, so they have to pay more property tax. Why should I pay more property tax just because I live in a nicer house, and especially because I don't have kids? Why should I pay for other people's children to go to school by upping my taxes? I don't want to do that. You know, so just thinking my benefit. Yeah, I don't want to pay more taxes. I don't want to do things for other kids, up other people's kids. Okay, so then the school bond doesn't get passed. The schools have to cut activities. So then there's no extracurricular activities for the kids. You know, they don't have as many sports or clubs or after-school activities. So what do the kids do then? They're out on the street, aren't they? Yeah? And everything they want to do costs money. Where are they going to get that money? Well, you break into somebody's house, or you steal their wallet or their handbag. Yeah? So whose house are they going to break into? Poor people's house? No, they're going to break into rich people's house because they have stuff there. Whose cars are they going to steal? Okay? So you see this self-centered mind that says, I don't care about other people's kids. I don't want to pay more property tax. Yeah. You're actually setting yourself up to have your place being burglarized or have more on the street crime. But then you are willing to pay more taxes to build prisons. Okay. So to educate the children and have after-school activities to keep them out of trouble and to give them more skills and things? No. To build prisons to lock them up? Yes. Yeah? But you see, that's the way the self-centered mind thinks. It doesn't think things through in the long term. You know, it doesn't think, I live in a society where I am interrelated with everybody in the society. So if there's people in the society who are not happy, it's going to affect me. Yeah? And if I don't want, you know, people to steal, if I don't want people to, you know, break into my house or steal my car or assault me on the street, then maybe if, you know, we use some tax money to remedy some of our social problems, then we wouldn't have as much crime. And people would be happier in general. And it's much nicer for me to live with happy people around me rather than miserable people around me. Isn't it? Yeah? So if we, you know, if we really thought things through and really saw that, you know, because now what people want to do is like, okay, I only care about myself, so I'm going to live inside a gated community and lock everybody else out. How long can you do that? Can you lock the whole world out? What about the spoiled kids inside the gated community? Yeah, they're going to get into mischief also. Okay? So, you know, to really think, if I want to be happy, you know, then I want to be happy. I can only be happy when the environment around me is happy. It's true, isn't it? You know, if everybody around us is fighting and quarreling, even though we're not involved, are we going to be happy? No. Yeah. If we were able to do something to help the other people so they didn't quarrel and fight so much, that would affect us and bring us a happier life, wouldn't it? Yeah? So here's where you see, you know, how interdependent we are, and that when we only think of ourselves, we actually bring more pain and suffering and unhappiness to ourselves. When we think of others and wish for the best for others, yeah, then our own pain and suffering get remedied in the process of it. Yeah? So I think it's something to really think about and to instill these kind of values in children.
I know self-centeredness in general, but
you know what?
Okay, let me rephrase it. I have seen some family members, they tend to write for the benefit of others.
Mm-hmm.
And the others is their close family members. Mm-hmm. So they do things for them.
Yeah.
And they genuinely doing it for them.
Mm-hmm.
But at the expenses of the others. So I think that is another type of self-centeredness as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so this is a good question. So you find in some families, people will do things for other family members, but they won't do things for people outside of the family. Okay? So again, this is partiality, isn't it? These people are my relatives, my family members, mine. Yeah? So it is good to be generous and considerate of them. Okay? It's very good. But it's even better to extend our generosity and consideration and kindness beyond our own immediate family. Yeah? Because in the end of the day, we're related to everybody, aren't we? Yeah? Some people do the opposite. They're so involved in doing social welfare work that they totally ignore their family. And they're, you know, they hardly see their kids don't get any attention. Yeah, so that's going to the other extreme. So, you know, in lay life you need some kind of balance there. But really, you know, we do see that, yeah, when the people around us are happy, you know, in your office, in your workplace, if the people around you are happy, you feel better, don't you? If the people around you are all competing with each other, it sets such a horrible feeling in the workplace, doesn't it? It's awful to work in a place where everybody's competing with each other. Whereas when you work in a place where people are really cooperating and helping each other, it's so nice. Yeah?
Sometimes that we try our best not to be self-centered and we try to not to please everyone, but generally we like to let to do the best for the benefit of most people. Mm-hmm. But somehow there will be one or two people in the organization. They will tend to be like very self-centered. You give, they take. You give, they take. You give, they take. You just take and take and take. And it's like no give and take situation. It's just taking situation.
Okay. So in some organizations, you meet people who are very demanding, and they only take whatever you give, they take, you give, they take. Okay? So with these people, again, you have to think compassion doesn't mean you always do what other people want. Loving somebody doesn't mean you always do what they want. Making people happy immediately, if it brings long-term disadvantages, is not something wise to do. Okay? So if there's somebody who's really being disruptive to the whole group, yeah, then you have to put the brakes on and say something to that person in a way that is kind but firm and be willing to try and help them with their problem instead of scream at them and say, "Don't you do that anymore! We can't stand working with you!" Because that's not going to do any good. You know, to be able to talk to them in a way where they can trust you and you can give them some feedback. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Don't we need to be able to learn to give without expecting anybody to give back? Though?
Yes, exactly. You know, so when we're in our giving, to not expect in return. And that's very hard. Yeah? And it's hard because sometimes, you know, we do expect in return, and then if you meet this kind of person that she's talking about who's always take, 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 then if you say, okay, I've got to give without expecting, I've got to give without expecting, but then sometimes that's not benefiting the other person if you do that. Yeah? So from our side, we've got to give without expecting. But we also have to see that for the other person's growth and for the peace within the entire organization, that person has to contribute something back. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Yeah? So not that I'm expecting and wanting something back from them, but for the peace among everybody and for that own person's growth. Because to let them just go through life being self-centered, you know, it's parents have to deal with this all the time, because when you're a parent, you want the best thing for your kid. So whatever your kid wants, you want to give them, you know, whatever you can afford, whatever, you know, you want to give them. Yeah? If you can only afford a little, you want to give that. If you can afford more, you want to give that. Okay? But you want to help your kid. But then, yeah, if you're the kind of parent who just does whatever your kid wants, your kid is not going to grow up and be able to function in society. They're going to have such a hard time because they won't know how to deal with the frustration of not being able to get what they want. And they're going to go through life expecting everybody to serve them and give them what they want. And if they nag enough and cry enough and scream enough, they'll get it. And bringing up a child in that way is doing a great disservice to the child. Okay? Yeah, so when we're talking about love and compassion and generosity, it doesn't mean you always give people what they want. You have to look at the big picture. Okay? And what they say, okay, is if it brings immediate benefit and long-term benefit meaning you create some good karma that will bring a good rebirth or liberation or awakening, yeah, if it creates happiness now and long-term benefit, definitely do it. If it creates short-term misery and long-term misery, definitely don't do it. Yeah. If it creates short-term benefit and somebody's happy, but long-term misery, don't do it. Yeah. But this is where we get stuck, and we often do it. Yeah. If it brings short-term misery but long-term benefit, then do it. And again, we get stuck with this one too. Okay? So we really have to think long-term and karmically, you know, when we make decisions. Okay? Then, yeah, so, you know, when we really look at self-centeredness, it's just a mess, and it makes a mess in our life. When we look at cherishing others, yeah, then it really is the source of all happiness. And here, especially, it's the cherishing others in the long-term. Yes, cherish them in the short term. Do what you can for them in the short term. But you cannot please everybody in the short term. And sometimes if you please one person, another person's going to be very upset. And so you have to really see what is best for the greatest number of people in the long term. And then you yourself sometimes have to deal and sit through the discomfort of somebody not liking you or being upset with you because you made a decision that in your eyes is for that person's long-term benefit and for the long-term benefit of the group of people. Yeah? So, yeah, but if you have that mind that cherishes others, it really gives you more confidence when you're making those kind of decisions because you're really thinking in the long term, yeah? What is best for people? How can I bring the greatest happiness to people? And that's what good parents do for their kids. Yeah, and so that's why they have to discipline their kids when the kids are young, so that the kids can learn to function as an adult. Because otherwise we grow up and we're monsters. Really? I mean, I think sometimes I remember things I did as a kid, and it's like, oh my goodness, like so totally selfish, totally not thinking of the kindness of others, not thinking of the effect of my actions on other people, only thinking about what I wanted. You know? And I think about some of those things I did as a kid, and it's like, oh, awful. Yeah, awful. I don't want to be that kind of person. Okay? So doing this, yeah, getting a handle on it, isn't a thing of saying, I shouldn't be selfish, I shouldn't be selfish, somebody needs something, I'm going to be Mary Poppins and give it to them. You know, I am Pollyanna plus. Yeah, that's what Pollyanna did, isn't she? Isn't she? You know, I'm the tooth fairy. Yeah? The Tooth Fairy, Pollyanna, and Mary Poppins all rolled into one. And I'm going to be the most majestic people pleaser that the world ever saw. Okay? That's not what this meditation is about. You know, because you see, if your inner dialogue is, I'm such a bad person because I'm selfish, and I want to win people's approval by being nice to them, it's not a very good motivation, is it? And you're not really understanding. That motivation has not understood the disadvantages of self-centeredness and the benefits of cherishing others, because that motivation is completely self-centered, isn't it? That motivation of, I'm such a bad person because I'm so selfish, is self-centered. Yeah? So that's why, you know, I said it's not a thing of saying, oh, I'm such a bad person because I'm selfish. That's not how you deal with this. It's really about looking at our lives, looking at our own experience, looking at the experience of others. See what happens as a result of extreme self-centeredness. Same with the benefit of cherishing others. Look in our own life what happens when we cherish them. Yeah, look at the kind of karma we create when we cherish them. Look at how they feel when we cherish them. Look at the long-term benefit, you know. So these things, you definitely have to do the meditation of seeing the defects of self-centeredness and seeing the benefits of cherishing others. It's not a question of saying, I'm bad because I'm self-centered and I want to be Mary Poppins and cherish others. Okay? Because you'll only, if you do that, first of all, it's not working, it's self-centered. Second of all, you're going to get so angry and frustrated. And you're going to go around thinking, I'm being so nice to people and nobody's appreciating me. Yeah, because you haven't really understood why we want to lessen self-centeredness, why we want to cherish others, and the reasons for it. And that's very important.
So, I know I have that problem. When we talk about that person that say, oh, I'm a bad person because I've done this, and you see, this is self-centered, my mind goes, So, like, I get a little bit, what do I do? What do I shift in there? And so you don't fall into that self-centeredness. Like, okay, I was saying to myself, okay, I'm seeing that. This is not what I want to do. So, and you just shift. So that's where you don't fall into the self-centeredness.
Okay, so you're asking about practical application.
Yes.
Okay, so you see that you're involved in some self-centered trip. Okay? If you have done a lot of meditation on the disadvantages of self-centeredness before, then as soon as you catch that, it's fairly easy to stop it. If you haven't done a lot of meditation on the disadvantages of self-centeredness and the benefits of cherishing others, then you have to stop and really think, okay, if I go ahead and I do this action, that self-centered is going to bring me my temporal pleasure right now, it's going to make other people unhappy, I'm going to be creating some negative karma, I'm going to adversely influence the other people around me, creating some commotion in their lives, creating commotion in my lives, creating the cause for my own suffering in future lives, adding more obscuration to my mind, adding more negative karma to my own mind that's obscuring me. So what use is doing this action if that's going to be the result of it? Okay, I get my own benefit for a short time, but so what? It lasts like 2 seconds and then it's gone.
It's very good. Thank you.
Yeah? So you sit down and think about it. Yeah? And you weigh it. Yeah? Okay, I want this. I can push and push and push and push. And what's going to be the outcome? I'm going to be resentful for the other people because they don't listen to me. I'm going to be angry at them. I'm going to speak harshly and create some negative karma to be spoken to harshly myself. Yeah. They're going to be unhappy. They're going to be upset with me. Then I'm going to be more upset because I'm living in this household with people who are upset with me. Do I want that? No. Yeah, I don't want that. So, you know, getting my way over this small thing and have to pay all of the rest of that as the result of getting my way on this small thing, it's not worth it. Yeah, not worth it. Okay? So you have to sit down and reason with this baby mind. Yeah? Yeah, really think about it. So that's why I keep saying, and it's going to be on the recording, do not say, I'm bad because I'm self-centered, and I'll be good if I please people. Sit down and think. Use your own experience. What happens when I'm really self-centered? And what happens when I cherish others? Yeah. And, you know, His Holiness often, when he talks about the benefits of compassion and the benefits of cherishing others, he says that the person who has the compassion or the person who cherishes others is the person who receives more benefit than the person who's being cherished and the person who is the recipient of the compassion. Yeah? Because he says, you know, sometimes you're kind to people or you cherish them, they can't receive it, but you can still feel good about giving it. Yeah? And you can't control if they're happy or they're miserable, but you can be happy yourself just because you take delight in being kind and delight in being generous. Okay? So, that's disadvantages of self-centeredness, benefit of cherishing others. That leads us to exchanging self and others. Okay? So exchanging self and others doesn't mean I become you and you become me and I get your bank account and you get my bank account. Yeah, I get your credit card and you get my expired one. Yeah, it doesn't mean that. It means that we're exchanging what the referent of those words are. So instead of the referent of the word I being here, the referent of the word I is there. Because from all of your viewpoint, you are I. And the referent of the word you, instead of being there, is here, because to the rest of the world, this is you. Okay? So then when you say, my happiness is most important, as we often say, it means all these other I's. The happiness of all these other eyes is most important. My happiness is most important. Your happiness isn't as important. My happiness is most important. All these eyes. Your happiness. Because this one is you to everybody in the universe except one person. So your happiness, you know, is not as important. It's got to go straight here, doesn't it? Okay? So that's, you exchange what that means. And then Shanti Deva also teaches this very interesting meditation. I won't go into it very much. But where you exchange self for others, and then you get proud and you look down on your old self and criticize it. Or you get jealous of your old self and scold it. Or you compete with your old self. It's really quite interesting to do this. Yeah. But it's interesting because then you start to think of how you appear to other people. Yeah? Mudita, you need to calm down and listen to this. What benefit did you get out of that, Mudita? Huh? Very good example, isn't it? Yeah. So you exchange self and others in that way. And then from there, that's when you then go on to the taking and giving meditation. Okay? Because on the basis of saying, you know, my happiness is most important, meaning there, and your happiness is not so important, meaning here. Your suffering hurts a lot. I mean, my suffering hurts a lot. Your suffering doesn't hurt so much. Yeah? Then when you do the giving and taking meditation, yeah, then you do it from a very, very different perspective. Because there's the suffering of all sentient beings, which is now my suffering, because they're all I. Yeah? And this one's you. So out of compassion, you know, all the I's are saying, you should have compassion for me, take on my suffering. So then we say, okay. Yeah, then you says, okay, I will, you know, that's my job. I'm not as important as I. So then you imagine taking on the suffering. Yeah, you imagine taking on the suffering of all the I's. Yeah, and then you use what I don't want, which is my suffering, to squash what you suffers from, which is self-centeredness and self-grasping. And then you take your body, virtue, and possessions and multiply and expand them and give them to I. Because I is saying, my happiness is more important. And there's a whole lot of I's there, and only one you who's not so important. Okay? So then it's taking suffering with compassion, giving happiness with love. Yeah. And when you do the taking and giving meditation, you know, it is taught in conjunction with the breath. You take suffering as you inhale, you give your possessions and everything when you exhale. That's when you're really good at it. You know, for the rest of us, we need to just sit and meditate a long time and think of the benefits of taking on, you know, my suffering. Yeah? And we need to really think of the benefit. Yeah, if you go so quickly to doing it on the breath, then it's just intellectual. Yeah. Oh yeah, I take on their suffering, give them my happiness. Oh, very easy. Yeah. But when you really sit and think about it, and what people suffer from, yeah, And then say, yeah, with compassion, I want them to be free of that suffering. And imagining, taking it upon yourself, yeah, then it can really have an effect. Okay? But you see, to really have the taking and giving meditation bring a strong effect, you have to do the meditations that come before it. You have to really do the equanimity and the equalizing and thinking of the disadvantages of self-centeredness, the benefits of cherishing others, and exchanging self and others. Yeah? Lots of people, they really like the idea of Tonglen. And you sit down, I'm taking on suffering, I'm giving happiness. But if you haven't done the meditations before that, the feeling of love and compassion is not so great inside you. Yeah? It becomes more of, well, I feel good about myself taking on this and giving my things. But you're not really doing it. Yeah? But when you really think of it, like especially, you know, if you aren't getting along with somebody, like mudita, if you thought, yeah, of all the suffering that Maitri goes through when you hiss at her and change her, yeah? Yeah. And that how miserable that makes Maitri, and you really care about Maitri?
I feel sorry.
Yeah. And you really care about Maitri because she's your sister and you want her to be happy? Yeah? And you don't want her to be miserable? Then you take on her suffering and use that to destroy your self-centered thought that wants to be the alpha cat, even though you're the youngest. Okay? So you see, you know? I mean, if she changed her behavior, often, you know, in family situations where, you know, people are going at each other, yeah, if one person changes, the whole dynamic has to change. Yeah? So, you just need one cat to cooperate, and then the other cat has got to change their behavior too. Okay? So we have time for a few questions here. Oh, let me just finish. Then after you do the taking and giving, then you, you know, it leads you into the bodhicitta. Okay? So the primary mind with two aspirations, first the aspiration to benefit others, and then because of that, the aspiration to attain Buddhahood. So bodhicitta, the object of bodhicitta is Buddhahood. That's what the focus is on. The reason for it is because you want to be a benefit. Yeah, in the long term to all beings. Yeah, even if they hiss at you, even if they chase you around the room. Okay. So questions, comment?
Using self-centeredness to destroy this, using other people's suffering to destroy our self-centeredness, is it because we are so painful of their suffering and it makes us stop being so self-centeredness?
Yeah, it's like when you really think of the misery of other people and then you think of how petty we are in terms of I want this, I want that, and then hear all these people suffering so much, yeah, then it's like how can I continue following that self-centered attitude? I want to get rid of it. So then you take the suffering of all the eyes out there and use it to destroy what you don't want in here, the self-centeredness.
So does it mean that, for example, oh, I want this bag, it's like so expensive. Then when I look at people who might not have even have 3 meals on their table, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at that, they're the suffering that they're going through, mm-hmm. poverty, then I'm like, oh, this self-centeredness of wanting this, wanting that, then it like, it's a direct antidote to that.
Yeah. Yeah, when you're doing the meditation, you take on their suffering and you think of it like transforming it into a lightning bolt, and it strikes at the lump of your own self-centeredness at your heart. So you really think that their suffering, you're using their suffering. You're using my suffering to destroy your self-centeredness. Yeah, so that way everybody benefits. All the I's benefit because their suffering has been removed. The you benefits because the self-centeredness has been destroyed.
How do you counteract that self-centeredness that they're wrong and I'm right? How do you... don't fall into that.
Into that one, okay. You know, I read something once that somebody was saying there's four areas that people get most stuck on. One is wanting to be comfortable. Two is wanting to be loved and praised and good reputation. Three is wanting to win. And four is wanting to be right. So if we're very, you know, these are four areas of a lot of attachment for us. So if we're very attached to being right, yeah, then I would sit and think, okay, in my whole life, this is a pattern of mine of I always want to be right. And then I do a little life review. Like, okay, it's a pattern of mine in so many relationships. So what has happened in those relationships when I've insisted on being right? What's the result then? Yeah? Well, I put others down, I humiliate them, I make them feel bad. Then they don't like me. Then I wonder why people don't like me. Look what I'm doing. Yeah, it's like, surprise! You know, sometimes we're so, like, puzzled. Why don't people like me? Why are they avoiding me? Well, if we looked at how we treated them, we might understand. You know? Yeah? So you do this kind of little life review, and okay, in my life, you know, I've insisted on being right an awful lot. What's happened in all those relationships? When I push and I trounce and I scold and I beat up, but I'm going to be right. And even when I'm wrong, I'm still right. Yeah, because I am never wrong. Even when in the back of my head I know I'm wrong, I am still right. And we push and push and push, don't we? And what happens?
You're not happy.
Yeah. We're not happy. The other person's not happy.
Yeah. I think self-centered thought is the major destroyer of trust between people.
Yeah.
You know, I see when I'm really getting on my high horse about wanting something and getting my way is that there's this trust that gets broken, that people, you know, and surrounded by not being heard, not being respected, not being able to collaborate or cooperate. But there's this part that people just don't come to you authentically with an open heart because they feel there's a little bit of a vigilance thing that happens.
Yeah.
The self-centered thought really destroys trust.
Yeah, it destroys a lot of trust. Because especially when we scold people and say nasty things to them, are they going to trust us? No, they're going to be real careful. Yeah? And they'll, like, might be nice to us, but they're going to stay away from us. And that's what I meant by, then we wonder why people don't like us. But, you know, we didn't look at, well, how did I treat them? You know? I ground them into the ground, you know, because I was going to come out, you know,
as
on top. I'm going to be the alpha cat.
Because I have a similar problem that I want to be the one to say the last thing, and I win. So in that sense, the I who is being humiliated, the I who is being suffered by being blamed for something that they did not do, this kind of pain, mm-hmm. turn me into the.
You take that suffering.
Yeah, suffering.
And then their suffering becomes a lightning bolt. And here, your self-centered thought, that's like, I'm going to get my way. You take their suffering and have it destroy that. Some people don't like the image of a lightning bolt and a solid rock. Some people like the image of, like, soapy water. And cleansing, you know, dirt, whatever image you know works for you, use that, okay. But it's helpful to think of, you know, the suffering that we, you know, our behavior often inflicts on other people. Okay, and again. Not doing it with this mind of, oh, I'm such a bad person. You know, because again, that's just, you know, I'm more important than everybody else. Now I've realized how much I've hurt you, and I feel so bad. I've hurt you so much. I'm such an awful person. So now, you have to do things to make me feel better. Yeah? Because I'm so beating up on myself and telling myself, and I feel so guilty. And now it's hint, hint, hint. You have to be nice to me and tell me how wonderful I am so I stop blaming myself.
Why not?
Because it's manipulative.
Yes.
See, I'm right. Yes, you should have known that to start with. I'm always right.
So she just changed the I in you, so you're always right.
Do the people online have any questions?
It is mainly comments. In appreciating that, just understanding that guilt is also self-centeredness. People appreciate very much the clear explanation of how equalizing and exchanging self and others works. Mm. Especially with the visual demonstration. And one person says, so you mean we have to think we're not as important as we think we are?
Wow! You know, this is the thing. You know, in one way, we are very important. In another way, we are totally insignificant. Normal, regular, ordinary human beings have those two things mixed up. We usually think, you know, I'm very important because my happiness is most, you know, the biggest thing in the world. You know, but in terms of my human potential, you know, and ability to attain enlightenment, I'm worthless. I'm insignificant. You know, anyway, there's all these other Buddhas. Let them do the work. Okay? But, you know, what the Dharma is trying to teach us is in terms of this self-centered mind that, you know, I want. In that way, we're actually very insignificant. Because there's all these other I's that are also wanting. Yeah? But in terms of our having the potential to become a Buddha, our having the Buddha nature, our having a precious human life, then, you know, in that regard, we're really quite important. Yeah? So we have to change the way in which we think we're important.
Yeah.
Yeah?
You spoke about the method of Shantideva. Is that in Shantideva's Bodhicharyavatara, the special method where you look from outside to yourself and you...
Yeah, that's in chapter 8.
Yeah, and I wanted to comment, lately I have made good experiences with remembering the Buddha or the teacher on the head of your on your head, mm-hmm. because it gave me some sense of safety. When I had a difficult person to work with, then I mm-hmm. felt I could do it better than without remembering the Buddha mm-hmm. or the teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so this is interesting. So, you know, they say usually to either, when you're going around your daily life activities, to keep the Guru Buddha on the crown of your head or a small Guru Buddha in your heart, you know? And they say to do that, and then it does give you more confidence and more trust and so on. You know, and it also makes you more aware of your actions, because sometimes we think, well, nobody's going to see if I do this. Whereas if you're thinking of the Buddha on your head or in your heart, yeah, somebody is going to see if I do this. Okay, good. Let's dedicate. Okay, so do some meditation on this. It's really juicy. You too, Mudita.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losam's teachings dispel in the darkness of the beings in the 3 worlds always increase. Idam gura namandala kamiryatayami.
Due to this merit,
may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezig, may you stay until samsara ends.
May the deeds
of explaining and practicing the Dharma, done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising, and non-violent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the West flourish.